and welcome to Series 4, Episode 1 of the Mancunian Candidates here on WSPFDB Rhino on Air and FabRadioInternational.com. My name's Paul Ripley, and facing me across the microphones is...
I'm still Mike Royce.
Still Mike Royce.
Indeed.
Right, Mike, please explain to people who've never heard the show before what's it all about. Well, and why we're here.
Well, if you are into politics and what's going on and the greater, the big picture, as it were, what's going on in America, we bring it to you from a British perspective. And we also talk about what's going on in Manchester, and we also bring some of the UK politics and we explain some of that so that our friends across the pond can get involved as well and find out why there's these issues with the Labour Party and Jeremy Corbyn, and why Theresa May's having so much trouble with Brexit. What is Brexit? We deal with that, but we also, for people listening in the UK, we hopefully explain some of the situations that are developing in the US that do affect you, whether you like it or not.
And this week we had Donald Trump at the UN, and obviously May at the UN, May being hounded by Boris, but however, Donald Trump with quite remarkable speech. Now, I've got the speech here, the best bits of the speech to play out, and I won't play it all because even though the best bits are 15 minutes long, we won't do a run about 6 or 7
Paul,
minutes.
Paul, you only have to play the money shot, don't you?
Well,
really,
we do, but I like to give a flavour because he said a few things which was surprising to me. Was at the end of it, he got standing applause by certain countries. Do you want to name the countries who stood up and applauded his speech? You guess.
No, I would have said that it's definitely not going to be France. It's definitely...
It wasn't France.
It's, it might be us, because we're stupid enough to be sycophantising.
Nope.
Well, who then?
Two countries in particular.
I don't know then.
Israel?
Oh, yeah.
Stood up and
yeah,
applauded.
That's a given, yeah.
And Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, there you go. I should have known.
They were cheering him on.
Yeah.
Shall we have a listen?
Yeah.
Terrorists and extremists have gathered strength and spread to every region of the planet. Rogue regimes represented in this body not only support terrorists, but threaten other nations and their own people with the most destructive weapons known to humanity. International criminal networks traffic drugs, weapons, people, forced dislocation and mass migration, threaten our borders, and new forms of aggression exploit technology to menace our citizens. To put it simply, we meet at a time of both immense promise and great peril. It is entirely up to us whether we lift the world to new heights or let it fall into a valley of disrepair. As President of the United States, I will always put America first. Just like you, as the leaders of your countries, will always and should always put your countries first. All responsible leaders have an obligation to serve their own citizens, and the nation state remains the best vehicle for elevating the human condition. But making a better life for our people also requires us to work together in close harmony and unity to create a more safe and peaceful future for all people. The United States will forever be a great friend to the world, and especially to its allies. We want harmony and friendship, not conflict and strife. We are guided by outcomes, not ideology. We have a policy of principled realism, rooted in shared goals, interests, and values. That realism forces us to confront a question facing every leader and nation in this room. It is a question we cannot escape or avoid. We will slide down the path of complacency, numb to the challenges, threats, and even wars that we face? Or do we have enough strength and pride to confront those dangers today so that our citizens can enjoy peace and prosperity tomorrow. If we desire to lift up our citizens, if we aspire to the approval of history, then we must fulfill our sovereign duties to the people we faithfully represent. We must protect our nations, their interests, and their futures. We must reject threats to sovereignty from the Ukraine to the South China Sea. We must uphold respect for law, respect for borders, and respect for culture, and the peaceful engagement these allow. And just as the founders of this body intended, we must work together and confront together those who threaten us with chaos, turmoil, and terror. The scourge of our planet today is a small group of rogue regimes that violate every principle on which the United Nations is based. They respect neither their own citizens nor the sovereign rights of their countries. If the righteous many do not confront the wicked few, then evil will triumph. When decent people and nations become bystanders to history, the forces of destruction only gather power and strength. No one has shown more contempt for other nations and for the well-being of their own people than the depraved regime in North Korea. It is responsible for the starvation deaths of millions of North Koreans and for the imprisonment, torture, killing, and oppression of countless more. We were all witness to the regime's deadly abuse when an innocent American college student, Otto Warmbier, was returned to America only to die a few days later. We saw it in the assassination of the dictator's brother using banned nerve agents in an international airport. We know it kidnapped a sweet 13-year-old Japanese girl from a beach in her own country to enslave her as a language tutor for North Korea's spies. If this is not twisted enough, now North Korea's reckless pursuit of nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles threatens the entire world with unthinkable loss of human life. It is an outrage that some nations would not only trade with such a regime, but would arm, supply, and financially support a country that imperils the world with nuclear conflict. No nation on earth has an interest in seeing this band of criminals arm itself with nuclear weapons and missiles. The United States has great strength and patience, but if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime. The United States is ready, willing, and able, but hopefully this will not be necessary. It is time for North Korea to realize that the denuclearization is its only acceptable future. It is time for all nations to work together to isolate the Kim regime until it ceases its hostile behavior. We face this decision not only in North Korea. It is far past time for the nations of the world to confront another reckless regime, one that speaks openly of mass murder, vowing death to America, destruction to Israel, and ruin for many leaders and nations in this room. The Iranian government masks a corrupt dictatorship behind the false guise of a democracy. It has turned a wealthy...
And there we go. A flavour of this speech from the day by Mr. Trump. Mike.
Well, problem is, nothing's changed. And what I mean by that, when it comes to North Korea, this has been going on. It's sort of escalated since this clown got into power. He's been coming out with this rhetoric constantly. I mean, people have forgotten that he promised to nuke Guam about 4 or 5 years ago, and Obama's tactic with him was to treat him like, oh yeah, he's a bit of an idiot, isn't he, and not overly comment on him, not ignore him, just sort of brush it off as if, oh, it's him just doing what he does, there you go. And he didn't take the bait. This is what he wanted. He wanted somebody on the other side going mad. It's making Kim Jong-un look absolutely a very powerful leader. I mean, can you imagine what he looks like in North Korea now? The people be thinking, yeah, he's standing up to the US, he's doing that. It's cementing his power over there, this.
Will they take it serious? Because everything that he seems to, it's like all bluster. In reality, nothing comes through. So will China take it serious that he is threatening to destroy a country completely? And if he was to do it, would not that sort of continue into China and then into South Korea?
I tell you what the worry is.
It's like surgery. The worry isn't a deliberate act
here. The worry isn't a deliberate act, right? This is the problem you're facing. It doesn't matter where. I don't think that China think for a minute that North Korea are actually going to launch nuclear weapons at Guam. And if they did think that they were going to launch into any territory of either Japan or the United States, China, I believe, would intervene, because nobody wants this. Nobody wants this. It's bad for business, as they say. Now, what you have here is the problem is not a deliberate act. You've got them launching missiles. This is the problem. You've got them launching missiles over Japan. Yep. And these missiles, until very recently, had a 30% failure rate. And the guidance systems kept going wrong, and lots of different things have gone wrong with them. If they keep firing missiles over Japan, there's a chance there that one of them may go off course and actually hit Japan by accident. And if that happens, we're going to have a war, and we are going to have a nuclear exchange at that point. It'll be limited, but it'll still cause an awful lot of damage to the environment and a loss of life.
What would you say is limited?
Millions dead.
Millions?
Yeah. Millions dead. That's a small percentage of the population of the planet, but it's a catastrophe. Like, the people... You've got to stop dehumanising the people in North Korea. They're not monsters. They're ruled by a monster. They're brainwashed by a monster. They're listening to one or two channels that are controlled by a monster. Their dissemination of news is controlled. The internet's controlled. Everything's controlled. These people do not... They're being told lies, they're being fed lies, and they're believing lies. That doesn't mean they're evil. These people, 2 million people being nuked and got rid of by taking out the capital and another major city, say, under a rule of engagement, say, scenario. That, to me, is as big a tragedy as 2 million people dying a nuke hits Chicago or something. They're real people, the normal people. You've got to take the regime that's controlling them out. You're going to end up killing 2 million innocent people. And these two million innocent people are the same. They've got the same value as 2 million Brits, 2 million Americans. And I don't understand why it's okay for him to say, I'll completely destroy an entire country. He's saying he'll murder millions of innocent people when he says that.
To people who support him, saying he's showing his strength like Putin does in
Russia. He's showing his strength.
And he's appealing to a certain band of workers within the States.
And he is, and I agree. But the problem is, he's showing his strength in the way that Attila the Hun showed his strength. There's been dictators all through history that have got into power and done this. But the problem is, we're in a modern age, and the weaponry is too severe, and it's all remote control. You can send drones to a country and cause absolute carnage, like a video game now. And you've got a guy like this. The problem here is not what Donald Trump will do. He'll never be able to do preemptive strikes or anything like that. But if something kicks off by accident, there is a thing that people may be familiar with. I don't want to insult anybody's intelligence. It's called rules of engagement. And the president won't be involved in what happens in that scenario. When you had the the Cuban Missile Crisis, for example. You had over 13 days this thing played out, and it was the closest we've ever come to this happening. And there was a standoff on the blockade, and the generals were eager to have a war and literally just nuke Cuba and invade Cuba and do some tactical strikes and get rid of Castro. They saw him as a massive threat, and they thought they'd use this as an excuse to. And they were believing in their head that the Russians would do nothing at that point, whereas the common consensus amongst intelligent people were that no, they would be a nuclear war. The Russians would strike mainland US if they invaded that, because they considered Cuba their territory under their protection at that point. Now, here's the thing, though, to try to trigger this war, the generals constantly fired chaff missiles into areas whenever someone was close to the blockade, and they were hoping to be fired back on. If a ship was fired back on, under rules of engagement, they have to take out some tactical targets nearby, and then there's a reprisal, then it escalates out of control. And that's what the problem is here. If a missile acts, that missile that got launched last week, which horrifically, I'm in a taxi on my way home and you get the breaking news, missile launched at Japan. That's all you see, because it's launched at, it's not gone over at the time the news breaks. And I'm going, oh God. And every time I get one of these, I think, oh my God. Because if it accidentally hits Japan, under rules of engagement, have to take out a tactical target in North Korea. And that's what has to happen. And they don't go to Congress for permission. They don't go to the president for permission. This just happens.
So for people listening around, it's quite worrying. It's very worrying. It's more than worrying.
It is. It's very worrying. It is. I thought this had died down.
The likelihood of another, let's not say world war, but certainly a war between the major nations, what's the percentage, would you say, at the moment?
I don't think it's spread that far. I just think you'll end up with a really, really bad ecological and humanitarian disaster in that region. Korea would end up nuked, and I think that North Korea would end up nuked. They may set off a nuke that went off in South Korea as well. You'd be talking a couple of million people dead, but what you've got to also remember is that these bombs are very big now. They're 20 times the size of the one that wiped out Hiroshima. Yeah. That is a problem because of the fallout going into the atmosphere. Yeah. It will not just affect
that
region,
it will
spread
across
the planet. But I
want to ask you this question, though, Mike. The likelihood of it happening, what do you think it is?
20 to 30%, but it's too high for me, that. I grew up, like I'm sure many people listening to this show in the UK, grew up, and America, grew up in a situation in the, say, the 70s, 80s, where you were scared that a siren would go off and it would be a nuclear strike. It was there were films like When the Wind Blows, and it was out there, and people were, it was a fear, a genuine fear, and it's dissipated. It's gone away during the 90s and the early part of this new century, you know, this new last decade. It's sort of, we've forgotten about the threat, and thank God my children who were in their early 20s, it wasn't in their life. The fact of a nuclear war and the end of the world was nothing they ever considered. And now they're ringing me on a consistent basis, where my youngest son, and he's just from the phone the other night, he went, Dad, they're saying it could be a nuclear war. What would happen if we had that? And I said, well, if you had a full-on nuclear war, there'd be nobody left. But if you had even a constrained one, it'll damage the planet.
Yeah,
it will.
Do you think people or the world ever learned? You know, we talk about, governments say it all the time, don't the government departments, we'll learn a lesson from this and we'll learn a lesson from that. Do you think the human race ever learns its lesson from the wars and conflicts that's gone on?
No,
over hundreds,
I don't.
Hundreds
I think
of years?
I don't. I don't think we've
do you think
ever.
We're always going to repeat ourselves.
I think that the education is important, and I think education and access to it is important, and I think the more you educate the populace, the more people are made aware of these things, the less people have an appetite for war. And unfortunately, you're always going to have a certain set of people. There's a culture out there, and I'm not blaming it on video games. I'm not blaming it on movies. I'm an editor of a magazine, and I'm putting movie reviews up every single day in the magazine, and these action movies, violent movies, whatever. There is a part of the psyche, male and female, that likes this gung-ho John Wayne six-shooter approach. And I feel that while that's there, you're always going to have somebody who wants a kickoff.
blood all over him, fighting off anyone who tries to help him, defending America even if it means his own death, rallying a nation of television viewers into hysteria to sweep us up into the White House with powers that will make martial law seem like anarchy.
From the UK, the Mancunian Candidates, only on WSPF-DB Rhino on air.
Right, another difficult question to start a new show off. Season 4, Episode 1 of Mancunian Candidates, Multiculturalism.
Oh, that one.
It's a big word.
That chestnut.
That chestnut's a rock. I get on the bus every morning and come into work here at Fab Radio Towers.
Yeah.
I used to get a car, but parking's too expensive now in Manchester. That's another story. And I get on this bus, and on this bus, I don't hear the English language spoken.
Oh, God, are we doing this?
I'm telling you.
Are we doing this?
Yes, we are doing it. Oh. We are doing it. I don't hear it spoken. Is that good or is that bad? I don't know. I'm just putting it out there. I don't hear the English word spoken. And my area has changed dramatically. Mm. For the better, for the worse, I don't know. It changed, though. Is that the colour of the people's skin? Not really, no. Some of it's changed, some of it hasn't. I mean, it's not so much. It could be a Polish worker, it could be an African worker. However, the driving in my area has changed. Now, you may laugh at me, but certain people...
I'm not, certain people
from certain countries don't know the English rules, and we suddenly get to people doing U-turns in the middle of the road. This is happening a lot, more than a lot.
Oh, my God.
It's causing crashes in my area.
Oh, my God.
I'm not sounding like Mr. Farage here. I'm telling you what's happening. You may live in a very posh area, Mike.
I don't live in a posh area.
Up in your high tower. It's an ivory tower that you live in. I live with the working class people of Manchester.
Yes,
and I always
so
have done.
Do I.
Well, in that tower it may look like it, but in reality it's not. So I live in an area which has changed. Now, if I say this to you, which I am doing now, people listening right now say, oh, he's the right racist then. He's a racist. He can't say stuff like that.
But you're focusing on some things that are going on.
Now, focusing
in
because
British
I'm not talking about it's changed 10%. I'm not talking about changed 20%. I'm talking about it's changed 80%. 80%.
And what have you based this on? Where's this 80%?
I based it on I get on a bus in the morning and I go shopping in the local. I go to local shops. I don't go to Sainsbury's like you. I go to local shops.
I don't have a chance to go to the.
I know you would. You send to one probably, but but it's changed and it's changed so much.
Yeah,
we had a party facing us the other night. I went on to like fun morning, very nice party indeed. Mm. But it's just outside on the tents, blasting out, great fun. If you lived in a different climate, maybe, but it was changed. I'm saying this now, and I feel like a racist by saying it, because I am a racist by saying that, I suppose. I don't know, but it's changed. I want to discuss that after we played this little clip.
Just a few days ago, a CBC Angus Reid Institute poll showed that 68% of Canadians want minorities to do more to fit into mainstream society instead of keeping to their own customs and languages. Surprisingly, only 53% of Americans said this about their own country. The difference can probably be attributed to Canada's multicultural policy that values a cultural mosaic over a melting pot. In 1971, during Pierre Trudeau's reign, Canada was the first country in the world to adopt state multiculturalism as an official policy. We decided that, as a nation, our new credo would be diversity is our strength, as our Liberal government likes to remind us every single day. But what the intellectuals and virtue-signaling elites failed to recognize is that you cannot mandate cultural relativism. Multiculturalism as an ideology has failed. People are not holding hands and singing kumbaya. They're setting up cultural enclaves because they've been told that they shouldn't integrate. They've been told to hold on to all aspects of their native culture. And it can be exciting to see cool festivals and holidays and different dresses. But with no assimilation, these groups not only retain the good aspects of their culture, but the bad ones as well. The values that are undemocratic and lie in opposition to Western values. Elites living in gated communities and CBC journalists with their cushy jobs and security-guarded condos shake their heads in disbelief at this Angus Reid poll. How could so many Canadians oppose our beautiful multiculturalism? Well, maybe it's because they're tired of the segregation and distrust they see every single day. I find it very telling that instead of really addressing the problems people had with lack of assimilation, the CBC instead wrote a sob story about Muslims and blamed Donald Trump for Canadians' thoughts. The article reads in a way that suggests these enclaved communities are already doing so much and people just need to be more open to them. Like this sentence that says, Lal Khan Malik, the president of the Ahmadiyya Muslim Jamaat Canada, said his group is working hard to build connections and communities across the country. How could people possibly dislike this? Well, maybe, CBC, it's because Ahmadiyya Muslim Jamaat Canada is the same sect of Islam that applied for a housing grant from the city of Toronto to build an affordable apartment building, upon which they proceeded to refuse applications from would-be tenants if they were not Muslim. This included a man in a wheelchair who had a limited option for subsidized housing because of his disability. The reality is that the mainstream media is playing a narrative counter to what is happening in everyday life. As the CBC and the Georgia Strait tout these new immigrants' acceptance in the paper, someone's grandma is being denied service in a recent immigrant's shop because of their skin color, gender, or sexuality. My father moved us out of an area in Surrey, British Columbia when I was a kid because he would go to the coffee shop in the morning and couldn't speak to anyone because he spoke English. And no, he wasn't surrounded by French speakers. He was surrounded by people who couldn't speak either of Canada's national languages, or rather, refused to. My father found it very sad. Now, he doesn't give a damn what your skin color is. He just likes to be able to interact with his own community and have some level of cultural unity, whether that be common sports teams, shared cultural values, a love of country, or just being able to speak the same language. But a lot of these people were more interested in India, Indian politics, the Indian language, and their own community. English speakers and more westernized Canadians are being pushed out of neighborhoods due to strong cultural change. Yet we don't seem to be discussing the fact that certain pieces of our cultural mosaic are enveloping other parts. There are areas where I can't even shop in and around Vancouver because I can't speak Chinese or Korean. I couldn't read the signs and people would talk behind my back in a language that I couldn't understand while pointing at me. This unassimilated multiculturalism has bred so much tension and social conflict in Canada that people are sick and tired of it. They want Canada. We don't want China or India or the Caliphate of North America. We want Canada to be Canadian. And that includes Canadians of all skin colors. Believe me, most Canadians that moved here from other countries don't want Canada to turn into the places that they fled from. In fact, I guarantee a lot of the people who voted to have more minority assimilation were minorities themselves. Yet, despite this being a big issue for Canadians, our Prime Minister seems more focused on defending Muslim gender segregation with the phrase, diversity is our strength, than dealing with the fact that the culture and economy of the West Coast is being sold off to the highest bidder right now. Just the other day, they were flying the flag of communist China outside of Vancouver City Hall. It's utter insanity. What's the point of calling us Canada if being Canadian means nothing but be whoever you want to be? What's the point of calling us a country if we have no other unique culture, language, or identifying factors? Why not join Sweden? Why not just join China? It's madness. And at some point, Canada is going to have to decide if we're going to be a sovereign nation. We're going to have to decide if we're going to be a country. Our politicians can't even touch the question of multiculturalism. They're horrified because they can't provide a satisfactory answer without offending almost everyone. They've come up with the perfect dodge. Just repeat, diversity is our strength, if ever faced with a tough question. Put a band-aid on that broken arm and hope no one notices. Just watch.
How do you reconcile your brand as a self-styled feminist prime minister with attendance at a gender-segregated event?
The fact is, values that define Canada include respect and openness towards our full diversity. Indeed, understanding that diversity is a source of strength, not a source of weakness, is why I think that politicians need to be focused on bringing people together rather than fomenting divisions.
It is incredibly important, particularly now after the Paris attacks, particularly now with ISIL raging around the world, to stand up for real diversity and to say our diversity is our strength.
So we in Canada
are not going to say Muslims are worse than Christians or are worse than Jews or are
not
worse than atheists.
The ideas are worse.
No, and their culture is not worse. And we also appreciate that ISIL does not...
So there we have it, Mike.
Interesting argument. Interesting.
She said, well, I liked what she said, but she said it far better and more eloquent than I could.
Well,
that's my point.
I like what she had to say about the fact of there's got to be an identity for a country, otherwise what's the point? And I see that. But I feel that the identity of a country changes over time, and I think that the people that are involved in
I agree
in
with that one, Mike, over a period of
over
time.
Over a period of time,
and
absolutely.
If that time is 2 years or 20 years, there is a big difference.
But the problem here is this. When it comes to this language thing that you were talking about and she was referring to there, that is, to some people, red rag to a bull.
Yeah.
But the problem with it is people are focusing on it a lot. Now, if me and you decided we're going to go and set up a radio station in France, we would make an effort to learn English. We'd live somewhere in Paris. We'd go into it. We'd do the station.
We'd work
that.
With the community.
Socialise, yeah. We'd interact with the community, yeah. But there'd be moments where me and you, I've just had a bad phone call about the station, there's a problem, and it's just me and you, and there's a couple of people nearby, and I just quickly blurt out a language that I'm more familiar with because it was a bigger part of my life.
Yep.
And that does happen, and you've got to be forgiving of that. I mean, there was an incident that's passing around on Facebook.
That's kind of cute in many ways.
In a way, yeah, and that's what I mean. It's not fair to use it as an exclusion mechanism so that you can take the piss out of two people stood next to him, and I can say, have you seen the state of what he's wearing? Look at his hair. He's a big fat idiot. Look at him. That's not on. And that's the stuff that winds people up. But, I mean, I read, it's on Facebook, this little story anecdote that's passing around, and you never know whether it's 100% accurate, but it's an interesting little story where there was two ladies in hijabs having a discussion on a bus, and the guy leans over and just goes, look, can you just at least speak English? And another guy perked up, just sat behind the woman and went, mate, you're in Wales, they're speaking Welsh. And that's what I mean. It's that you can go further down. Like, if Wales, should you be speaking Welsh or should you be speaking British? Okay. Canada, it's obviously French or English. And yeah, I mean, I get it. But
there is levels of it.
I don't know. There's got to be a reason why it's gone down this route, though, because Rusholme, for example. Areas like Levenjum. I've watched Levenjum go from a pretty predominantly English sort of area with Greg's little bakeries, little corner shops, newsagents, all English, white faces everywhere. And now it's all Asian businesses now. Every single shop there is all Asian, and you've seen all the remainder of the shops just disappear. And even the banks that are there now, the banks are not TSB, they're whatever. There's the Bank of Habib, and there's another one that's a that's compliant with Sharia law. It's quite odd to see, but there's got to be a reason why it's happened, and I don't think anybody's looked into that. I mean, could it be, here's the other side of the coin, have we not welcomed people into the community? Have we been frosty when these people have arrived here? Have we not said hello to them? Have we not, like these people you're saying, they're all speaking another language, have you ever said hello? Have you ever let on to them, been friendly to them? I don't know, because I walk about my life and I keep my head down sometimes when I've got my mind on other things and I don't pay attention to people, and maybe we should.
Well, I can give an example. I'm not saying I'm a saving grace and whatsoever. My next door, neighbour, who used to be next door, but used to be actually next door to me, he works for a housing association, and he's bought the house 3 doors away. He's the most loveliest chap who came over when he moved in, brought me a bottle of wine, said, I'm your new neighbour, here's a bottle of wine, blah, blah, blah.
Isn't that nice?
And we should nod to each other, we should always say hello to each other. We don't go in each other's houses, because I'm not that type of person. And I make the point of, you know, waving at his kids when I drive past them or whatever, and vice versa. And there's no issues there whatsoever because he's a nice person.
Community, yeah.
Community, nice person.
That is a community.
Like I say, we'll never be like, I'll never go for a pint with him, I don't think. But you know, I wouldn't say no if, for example, he was in a pub, I'd go over to him and buy him a pint, whatever. Yeah. You know, that type of world. But it's not all like that. It's not all like that in a way. I'll give you a clear example of that. I was on the bus, on the way in this morning. And this sounds so trivial.
It's all happened on the bus for you, doesn't it?
2:19. I was on the bus this morning, and it sounds really trivial, this, but a guy there, and he's playing his music, which I hate. If it was rap music, it was rock music, whatever music was coming out of the phone, I'd say, well, you don't do that now on the phone. You put your headphones in. You know, I'm sat here reading my book on the way in.
And that playing, is a bit odd.
And he's playing, he's playing his local music from where he's from.
Okay.
Which is, I don't know. I have no idea. But it was like blasted out. And then a news report comes in and it's all in that language.
Yeah.
So it's been blasted out on the bus with the speaker influence. It's different culture. I mean, he may do that at home where he was in another country.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And it's a different culture. And I'm thinking, just stop it, mate. Just put your headphones in or something. That's not wrong for me to say that I'll think that way. Or is it? Am I a racist?
You get noisy Brits, though, don't you? I was on a train and there was a hen party.
Absolute arseholes.
And it's a hen party in a carriage, and they decided they would put a little MP3 player. They just stuck one of them stuck the phone in it. And obviously they were Bluetoothing music through this little speaker that was absolutely banging loud. It was like being in a club, yeah. And then they broke out all this food and stuff, and they just started having a little party for 2 hours, and everybody else had to put up with it. And they had the worst taste in music I've ever heard in my life, And they were there just getting levered on Lamborghini. You know, that's the sort of girl we're talking about. And it's like, well, she's inconsiderate and that guy's inconsiderate. And really, they're white. He's probably not. They're still both inconsiderate balance, aren't they?
That's my view on the world, really.
You know, I think there's no consideration for other people.
No.
But unless he's making some cultural point where he's like, well, I'm gonna do my thing, sod you. I don't know.
There's an attitude as well on certain groups with, like, they used to be here from, say, Salford to here in Manchester, in cars, racing around in cars.
You get that in Stockport. Every Thursday night there's this weird race meet, and it is all young Asian youths.
Yeah.
And they've got all the cars are all the same. They've got a car that's cost them about 1,500 quid, and they've spent about $5,000 on it on rims, a stupid stereo that's enough to power a nightclub, and they're just going round doing donuts on car parks, driving around the streets, going absolutely crazy, and the police don't interfere because they just don't want to, because there's so many of them. There's about 30 cars full of young lads. You're talking about maybe 60 or 70 lads. So it's probably more trouble than it's worth to them. But at the end of the day, someone's going to get killed one night because they're just doing that. Now, if a group of non-Asian people were doing that, you do feel that the police might do something.
Yeah, there's something wrong. So now you
can
go
over
to my side
racist.
Now.
No, people are worried about being racist, but I don't think...
The reason to me that Brexit happened because of views of, like me, just a normal bloke in the street, feeling slightly uncomfortable, maybe for the wrong reasons, but still having them feelings.
Yeah, but it's a bit late now, and surely you need to be thinking about what can be done to make this work better.
Well, I don't know the answer.
Well, explain to me in your head, why do you feel there are areas like Levenjoom, like Rusholme, that are total, they're like little pocket countries?
Well, there's areas
area.
In Oldham
where
they are, and it's clear, and I've talked to the police, because a friend of mine's a Bobby, where they are clear no-go areas for white people.
Right.
Clearly,
well, that's
no
insane,
go
isn't it?
Areas.
That's insane, isn't it? But equally the other way around, I wouldn't be happy if there was an area that's done.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, but there's a lot of problems in Oldham with it.
Yeah, and it's happened over the years.
Yeah.
And it's come... Well, it's the worst situation. I mean, for people who don't know, Oldham's a smaller town outside of Manchester, satellite town. And it's become more and more... Like Bradford, which is a major town in the north of England... no white people there. Mm. Is that good or bad? Well, it's changed and it's come like white people are allowed in the area. That surely is wrong, Mike.
No, I don't know about not allowed.
No-go area.
But you can call it a no-go area and then you're propagating.
Okay, you walk down there past 7 o'clock at night, you will be mugged. No question about it. Police advise people don't go to that area.
To Bradford as a whole.
Certain parts of Bradford and certainly parts of Oldham.
Yeah, we see it needs to be dealt with, and the main thing that needs to be dialogue between communities, and this should have been going on all along, and this sort of talk is a self-fulfilling prophecy, because you talk about a no-go area and then people stop going to that area because it's a no-go area, and then suddenly it really is a no-go area. And that's the problem with this sort of discussion, when people use those phrases. I don't think they help at all.
But it's true, though. Politicians.
There can be elements of truth in
it. We have the politicians who won't even discuss this, because Labour won't discuss this, because it goes against, like she said in that little clip.
Well, unless it's Jeremy Corbyn about Jewish people, then he'll be quite anti-Semitic. But
no one will discuss it, though, will they?
No, they won't discuss it.
Because fear of upsetting people, which is fair enough, but they won't discuss it. So how can we go forward?
Well, they need to discuss it, don't they? That's it. That's the end of story. They need to discuss it. And somebody, at some point, it's a conversation that needs to be had, because we need to decide what this country is going to be. And all a lot of countries, like he's talking about, the thing with the United States is more interesting, because the difference between the states... There's you don't get as much intolerance, believe it or not, between the states in America. Like, you won't get somebody in who's from Texas having a go at somebody who's from New York, you know, just because he's different from them. And yet, do you know, geographically speaking...
We do have north and south a bit.
There's a little bit of that going on, but that's even here we've got that. But but you've got, in between, you don't get people picking on each other because they're from a different state normally.
No.
And that's weird. You do get a bit of it, but nowhere near like you're talking about between different countries. Yet if you look at the size and the landmass of Europe, you look at the size of North America, it's not that different. These states are so big, they are countries in themselves.
Absolutely,
And yet that patchwork is it hangs together better than some of these areas we've got in the UK.
But we used to renounce, a lot of American friends tell me, that the UK was known for clear policies and guidance, I suppose, from the governments. And it's a place you go to where the colour of your skin didn't matter, really. Didn't matter. Obviously, there's been a history of that, and they were so refreshing for them to come to Manchester to come across this. Mm. And that's changed because the balance has changed. And not so much about colour of skin, it's just a culture of different people coming in to overtake. It's like aliens coming in. Aliens from Mars come here. And it's great, welcome in, Martian. Mm. But suddenly, when there's only you left and all the rest of the Martians, you feel like you're the alien.
But the thing is, it's all down to the individual. You've got to decide you're not racist, and you've got to decide you're not tolerant of racism. And the minute you do that, at least you're setting your stall out. And I mean, I don't know any racist people. Really. Now, I don't know any overtly racist people. I honestly don't know one person.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. Stepfather, I would say he is, because he also says certain words from that era.
Of course, My grandmother had a tinge of that, which was unpalatable, but, you know, it grows. It sadly...
And at times, you do stand up and say, shut up.
You do, yeah. I used to tell her to and all. She wouldn't understand it. She was just brought up in a different era. And at that point, I mean, I grew up, there was more racism then. That was the era of Love Thy Neighbour on TV, and people would be... But can I say, even though it was more negative, people at least were talking about race then.
Yeah.
And they weren't. There was a famous book called, that's really good, that's got a lot of insight on this, and I can't remember the author now, but it was called There Ain't No Black in the Union Jack, and it was out a while ago in the 70s, and I had a read of that once, and it was very, very interesting about how we had set up we'd set up almost segregation at the time, where we would class certain people as inferior, and why we did it. And it went into the psychology of it. And I think there's a lot to be learnt about it. And race shouldn't be a taboo subject. You shouldn't be afraid of asking a black mate of yours Listen, this stuff of it I'm hearing about, this racism, whatever, what have you experienced in your life?
Should we celebrate St. George's Day?
Well, it's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, everybody should celebrate whatever day they want to celebrate. I don't think you should start going, dumbing everything down to the point where people are scared of having a national celebration. It doesn't matter about celebrating St. George's Day as long as it doesn't mean anything racist, as long as it's not a nationalist celebration. I don't think it should be nationalist. Let's face it, St. Paddy's Day. It's not a nationalist celebration. It's an excuse for a bit of fun and a bit of a laugh and some pictures
and lots of
beer. Yeah.
And lots of Guinness.
And lots of beer.
Guinness sales.
Yeah. And that's nice. And that it's not that negative.
No.
Where there's a lot of pissheads and Manchester's a bit rough, but other than that, it's great. You know, I mean, it's brilliant. That's it. So St. George's Day, if it's like that, that's fine. But the problem is there's not a lot of really other than... It's been hijacked by a lot of skinhead groups and oi bands and stuff back in the 70s and 80s, you know, and that's the problem. I mean, do you find the sad part of it, I don't know if you find this, do you find the actual English flag a racist symbol?
No, not really.
It's used, is it?
It's used.
Sometimes.
It's been hijacked, like I say, by right wings, which brings me to the next little clip we're going to play now. The right wing... in a place which has got a history which you wouldn't like to possess, of Germany. And Germany's right wing is rising, and it's rising fast. Have a listen to this.
Michael Seifert is a laid-back kind of guy.
I used to play the drums, when long hair and... We used to smoke these big joints.
A Bob Dylan fan and retired radio journalist, he's still nostalgic for the 60s. He's also a member of a German right-wing party that in recent years has sent shockwaves through the country's political system. He joined the Alternative for Germany party, or AfD, in 2013 in protest at the Eurozone bailout of Greece. Now a local councillor, he's also a strong supporter of the AfD's policy on immigration. It was the only party in Germany that strongly opposed Angela Merkel's decision to open the country's borders to refugees. The AfD believes it was wrong to let so many undocumented aliens into the country.
In Germany, if you go fishing without a license, you're in trouble. You have to pay a fine. But on the other hand, you let hundreds of thousands of people in without registering them. That's completely idiotic in a way.
Mr. Seifert is not alone. The AfD became wildly popular during the refugee crisis, attracting millions of voters disillusioned by Germany's established parties. This month, it's expected to make its biggest ever political breakthrough.
And it's here in the Bundestag, the seat of German democracy, that the AfD is likely to gain seats in the country's election.
That is, if it doesn't implode first. In recent months, the AfD has been racked by internal power struggles and political controversies. The iconic Holocaust Memorial here in Berlin was at the centre of one such scandal that rocked the party in January, when AfD leader Björn Höcke said Germany should stop atoning for its Nazi past, and directly criticised the monument. The AfD leadership is now trying to expel him, but many in the party agree that Germany should stop apologising for its past. His views were echoed at an AfD town hall in the sleepy town of Bad Dürrenberg, just a few months before national elections.
Das ist, Hitlers Schatten wird immer länger, je länger er in der Vergangenheit, je länger die Ereignisse zurückliegen, und das ist unnatürlich. Ich würde sagen, es ist ein unnatürlicher Zustand. Vergangenheit muss vergehen. Wir müssen lernen, Vergangenheit vergehen zu lassen.
But already Mr. Höcke's speech has done lasting damage to the AfD's image.
Da war eine rote Linie überschritten, da sagen sie, diese Partei können wir nicht mehr wählen. Das hat sich in den Umfang direkt nach der Rede sehr deutlich gezeigt.
AfD politicians say it's true the party has shifted a bit. It's less focused on the euro, Greek bailouts and knocking the EU, and is more openly anti-immigration. But they also deny that the party has shifted decisively to the right.
Ganz klar ist eines, zum Start, zum Beginn der AfD gab es sicherlich eine kleine Umorientierung. Das hat aber damit zu tun, dass natürlich die Flüchtlingswelle, die Masseneinwanderung kam, dass wir uns der auch angenommen haben, weil das das wichtigste Thema auch unserer Bürger im Moment ist. Wir haben ja gesagt, wir schauen den Bürgern auf den Mund, wir sind eine Partei der Bürger.
The views of the AfD seem to strike a chord in Bad Dürrenberg.
Alles Mögliche drumherum. Im Land ist pro Jahr etwa 260 Millionen Euro. Dann wisst ihr doch, wo das Geld bleibt, was nicht für unsere Zwecke zur Verfügung steht. Und dafür.
Ich sehe mich selbst auch als Patriot. Also ich möchte, dass es uns Deutschen hier auch gut geht in unserem Land, dass wir uns sicher fühlen. Und ich sehe auch in der aktuellen Politik einige Verfehlungen, insbesondere die Flüchtlingskrise.
Those in government, however, seem less concerned with the advances the party has made.
Man sagt, die AfD gibt es ja länger als die Flüchtlingskrise jetzt ist. Aber dass sie dazu gewinnen würden, war schon zu erwarten. Man merkt jetzt, wo die Zahlen wieder runtergegangen sind von den Flüchtlingen, ist auch bei den Menschen wieder mehr Ruhe da. Und sofort ist ja bei der AfD auch die Zustimmung wieder etwas runtergegangen.
The Höcke controversy also continues to reverberate. More people are turning away from the party, fearing it's shifted too far to the right.
Mittelfristig und auch langfristig hat eine Partei, die sich nicht eindeutig abgrenzt vom Rechtsextremismus, bei uns noch nie eine Chance gehabt, auf der Bundesebene zumindest genügend Wählerpotenzial zu finden. Das hängt natürlich ganz stark auch mit unserer Vergangenheit zusammen.
That's a concern for moderates like Michael Seifert.
We must take a stand against right-wing extremism in this party. I don't say this only from like a tactical point of view, but I feel this deeply. I don't want anything to do with nationalistic or right-wing extremists or anti-Semites. I find it very horrible.
The AfD's leaders insist the party is here to stay, but if Michael Seifert and those like him want to assure its future, they'll be hoping the scandals and infighting will finally become a thing of the past.
So there we have it. The rise of the right in Germany, a place where I would like the rise of any party, really. Certainly nothing on the Christian Socialist parties, was it?
Yeah, well, there's plenty of that influence over there. It's funny because you don't want to be judgmental. Over the years, the German race, it sounds a bit weird putting it that way, but there is a certain difference in attitude and approach and even sense of humour, the whole thing. I've known quite a few German people and... There's a certain... there are certain personality traits that distinguish them. I shouldn't even be saying of them because that's a disruptive word.
You're being racist, Mike, aren't you?
I'm not being racist. I'm being honest about they're like Dutch people in the DNA. They're quite a bit taller, actually.
Very tall.
Yeah. You'll meet. It's not uncommon to see a girl over 6 foot.
No.
That's quite normal. Yeah. And
I felt like a dwarf when I was there.
Yeah, that's a thing. And it's not racist to acknowledge that there are certain character traits and certain physical traits that are endemic.
Bad drivers and...
No, bad...
Like me, near me.
I bet they're just young, scally Brits.
No, it's actually not. It's not.
I bet they are. Well, they are where I live. That's all you get. Yeah, you get people doing U-turns and it's just some knobhead boy racing.
No. Sorry, I'll put you off this swing.
Yeah, but anyway, I think there is a certain... I think it's better in the youth, but certainly back quite a few years ago, I met a lot of German people and there was a bit of an arrogance. But nowadays, young German people that I've met seem to be more chilled out, lot more chilled out. And I do think there's been a massive, and I do like the fact that the whole, they're not whitewashing what happened with World War II. They're not whitewashing Hitler. It's taught in school. They're made to realise what happened in their name. And it's a good cautionary tale. It's probably the biggest cautionary tale of all human history. You know, of this is what can happen if you elect somebody, give them all the power that they that you could possibly give to a person, you will end up with a dictatorship. And if then at that point that person goes crazy or starts to do something inhumane, you're along for the ride, whether you like it or not. And fascism is very, very dangerous. And yeah, I think that the young people in Germany are more intelligent than to allow this to happen. I think it's more
pockets. Is that why the president's voting is this weekend?
Yeah.
Is that why she's favourite to get
correct,
in again?
Yeah, and I
because
think young people are going to be, because the rest of them are too dodgy. This thing's wrong with everybody who's been standing. I mean, you say this, so the Christian side of it. I think young people, I do think young people seem to like Angela Merkel. And some young people have never known anybody else now.
No. Would you like her to be our president, our prime minister?
Prefer her to the one we've got, yeah. And she's not politically, she's to the right of me, but I'd rather have her than this clown that we've got at the moment, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, she's at least, she's a sensible person. And I do like the way she dealt with Donald Trump. I think she did it right.
In her place.
She was polite. She was firm, and you know she tried to treat him civil, but was equally not afraid to just tell him what how it is.
Right, we've got literally a couple of minutes left on the show, and I just want to talk to you quickly about something going on in the UK right now. They're saying it's time to end this nonsense that we've been involved in for the last is it 7 years? 7 years of cutbacks and
austerity.
And the world invented by George Osborne of austerity, and the public sector are getting pay rises through, apparently.
It's a smokescreen.
What's your views on the austerity ending? Is it ending? Was it a load of nonsense in the beginning?
It's not going to end.
Because some countries
tourism.
Survived and have done better than us by not even going down that road of austerity, about investing back into the structure of the country and the infrastructure, and that's how they got out of the jam the world was in financially at the time.
Okay.
Here's how it is.
Austerity. Well, I tell you what, why didn't we lock up the bankers that caused all this mess? Because this amount, and the Tories have done a great job of making it seem that this deficit that they inherited when the coalition came in, with the Lib Dems and them, they did a good smokescreen job of making out, like, Labour ran the economy into the ground. This is why we got that.
No, repeated last weekend, actually, and pressed it on TV.
Yeah, it's not true. What happened was all the bankers, most of which were mates of the Tory party, they were donors to the Tory party, they were involved with the Tory party, certainly mates of George Osborne and David Cameron's, they crashed the economy of this country by stealing money. They literally took money from the accounts that they're supposed to be holding on behalf of the depositors and gambled with very dangerous derivatives and CDOs and other weird instruments that were all based on failing mortgages and failing parts of the economy, but were sold. So it's like, you know, pre-packing food that's about to go off. And same thing happened in America. Same thing happened in Iceland. Iceland, instead of inflicting austerity on the populace, sent everybody to prison, took the banks
bankers,
off them,
yeah.
took the banks off them, ran the banks so that they could make money, and then took the money back that it
right.
cost to rescue the
bank. The question is, why was that not main news across the world?
Because we're all fucking stupid. Sorry, you'll have to beat that out, but that's how strongly I feel about it. The problem here is we're all hoodwinked. We're just stupid. We saw what happened. We saw what happened. The banks crashed. They did the equivalent of going to a casino with our money. They gambled, they lost, and then for the last 7 years, under the guise of austerity, we've been paying that money back that is the consequence of illegal gambling. Should have all been in prison. All of them should have been in prison. Every single person involved in these banks that caused this.
And that's the Mancunian candidates for this week. Join us again next week. We'll talk about some stuff about regarding immigration again, going on in Sweden, what's happening there. And Mike, well, I'm sure we'll be voicing on what's going wrong in this country, in the UK. Join us again next week, and we'd like to say goodbye. My name's Paul Ripley.
And I'm Mike Royce.